Part 5, Eye of the Warrior. Courage. In any language, the word has a special ring to it, as much, I suspect, from the reverent way in which it is spoken as from the actual sounds of the letters. Courage. The word evokes images of great deeds and great character, the grim set on the faces of men defending their town's walls from raiding goblins, the resilience of a mother caring for young children when all the world has seemingly turned hostile. In many of the larger cities of the realms, young waifs stalk the streets, without parents, without homes. Theirs is a unique courage, a braving of hardships, both physical and emotional. I suspect that Artemis and Treri fought such a battle in the mud-filled lanes of Kalimport. On one level, he certainly won, certainly overcame any physical obstacles, and rose to a rank of incredible power and respect. On another level, Artemis and Treri surely lost. What might he have been, I often wonder, if his heart had not been so tainted? But I do not mistake my curiosity for pity, and Treri's odds were no greater than my own. He could have won out over his struggles in body and in heart. I thought myself courageous, altruistic, when I left Mithril Hall determined to end the threats to my family. I thought I was offering the supreme sacrifice for the good of those dear to me. When Catterbury entered my cell in House Benray, Wim, through half-closed eyes, I glimpsed her fair and deceivingly delicate features. I learned the truth. I did not understand my own motivations when I walked from Mithril Hall. I was too full of unknown grief to recognize my own resignation. I was not courageous when I walked into the Underdark because, in the deepest corner of my heart, I felt as if I had nothing to lose. I had not allowed myself to grieve for Wulfgar, and that emptiness stole my will and my trust that things could be put aright. Courageous people do not surrender hope. Similarly, Artemis and Treri was not courageous when he came with Catterbury to rescue me. His actions were wrought of sheer desperation, for if he remained in Menzoberranzan, he was surely doomed. And Treri's goals, as always, were purely selfish. By his rescue attempt, he made a conscious choice that coming after me was his best chance for survival. The rescue was an act of calculation, not of courage. By the time Catterbury had run out of Mithril Hall in pursuit of her foolish drow friend, she had honestly overcome her grief for Wulfgar. The grieving process had come full circle for Catterbury, and her actions were motivated only by loyalty. She had everything to lose, yet had gone alone into the savage Underdark for the sake of a friend. I came to understand this when I first looked into her eyes in the dungeons of House Benray. I came to understand fully the meaning of the word courage. And I came for the first time since Wulfgar fell to know inspiration. I had fought as the hunter, savagely, mercilessly. But it wasn't until I looked again upon my loyal friend that I regained the eyes of the warrior. Gone was my resignation and acceptance of fate. Gone was my belief that all the world would be right if House Benray got its sacrifice, gave my heart to Loth. In that dungeon, the healing potions returned strength to my battered limbs. The sight of grim, determined Catterbury returned strength to my heart. I vowed then that I would resist, that I would fight the overwhelming events and would fight to win. When I saw Catterbury, I remembered all that I had to lose. Drizzt Do'Urden. Starless Night, Chapter 23. Duk'Tok. She reached for an arrow, then shifted her bow out in front of her in defense as a glob of greenish goo erupted from the wand and flew at her. Catterbury's bow was suddenly tight against her chest, and she was flying to smack hard against the wall. One arm was pinned tightly against her chest, the other tightly to her hip, and she could not move her legs. She could not even fall from the wall. She tried to call out, but her jaw would not work, and one eye would not open. She could see, barely, with the other eye, and she somehow managed to continue to draw breath. And Treri spun about, sword and dagger coming to the ready. He dived to the side, in the middle of the room, in front of Catterbury, when he saw the three drow females enter, two of them aiming loaded hand crossbows his way. The agile assassin rolled back to his feet, and started forward, rising up as if he would leap into his attackers. Then he dived low, sword leading, The skilled drow females held their shots through the assassin's feint, then brought their hands in line. The first dart hit Entrevi's shoulder and jolted him more than he would have expected. Suddenly, his momentum was stolen and he was standing straighter. Black arcs of electricity, writhing like sparking tentacles, shot out from the dirt, burning him, jolting him back a few steps. The second dart got him in the belly, and, though the initial hit did not pain the assassin too greatly, a huge electrical blast followed, hurling him backward to the floor. His sword went flying, narrowly missing the trapped Caterbury. Entreri came to a stop at the young woman's feet. He still clutched his jeweled dagger and thought immediately that he might have to throw the thing. But he could only watch in astonishment as the fingers of that hand twitched involuntarily, his grasp on the dagger weakening. He willed his arm to heave the blade, but his muscles would not respond, and the dagger soon toppled out of his trembling hand. He lay on the stone at Caterbury's feet, confused and scared. For the first time in his life, those finely honed warrior muscles would not answer his call. It was the third female in the middle of the trio that held Drizzt's attention. Vendez Benray, Duk Tok, his merciless torturer for all those long days. Drizzt stood very still, holding the coat of chainmail in front of him, not even daring to blink. The females flanking the cruel Benray daughter put away their hand crossbows and drew two shining swords each. Drizzt expected to be blown away or held by some magical intrusion, as Vendez quickly chanted under her breath. "Valiant friends," the wicked noble remarked sarcastically, using perfect surface common. Drizzt understood the nature of her spell then, a dwomer that allowed her to communicate with Entreri and Caterbury. Entreri's mouth moved weirdly, and the expression on his face revealed what he was trying to say more than any decipherable words. "High ritual?" "Indeed," Vendez replied. "My mother and sisters, and many visiting matron mothers, are gathered in the chapel. I was excused from the initial ceremonies and was instructed to bring Drizzt Duarden into them later." She eyed Drizzt and seemed perfectly content. "I see that your friends have saved me the trouble of forcing the healing potions down your throat. Did you really expect to so easily walk into House Benray, steal our most valuable prisoner, and walk out?" Vendez asked Entreri. "You were seen before you ever crossed the web fence, and there will be inquiries as to how you got your unclean hands on my brother's mask. Grumpf, or perhaps that dangerous Jarlaxle, will have many questions to answer. I am surprised at you too, assassin," she went on. "Your reputation precedes you. I would have expected a better performance. Did you not understand the significance of mere males guarding our prize catch?" She looked to Drizzt and shook her head. "Those pretend cards I put in place were expendable, of course," she said. Drizzt made no move, showed no reply in his features. He felt the strength returning to him as the healing potions did their work. But that strength would make little difference, he realized, facing the likes of Vendez and two supremely armed and trained females. The ranger looked to his coat of armor disdainfully. It would do him little good held in his hands. Entreri's mind was working more clearly now, but his body was not. The electrical impulses continued, defeating any coordinated attempt at movement. He did manage to drop one hand into his pouch, though, in response to something Vendez had said, some hint at fleeting hope. "We suspected that the human woman was alive," Vendez explained. "In the clutches of Jarlaxle, most likely, and we hardly hoped that she would be so easily delivered to us." And Entreri had to wonder if Jarlaxle had double-crossed him. Had the mercenary concocted this elaborate plan for no better reason than to deliver Caterbury to House Benray? It made no sense to Entreri, but little about Jarlaxle's actions these last hours made sense to him. The mention of Caterbury brought a sense of fire to Drizzt's eyes. He couldn't believe that the young woman was here in Nenzaburanzen, that she had risked so much to come after him. Where was Gwenhiver, he wondered, and had Brunner or Regis come along beside Caterbury? He winced as he eyed the young woman, wrapped in greenish goo. How vulnerable she seemed, how utterly helpless. The fires burned brighter in Driz's lavender eyes when he returned his gaze to Vendez. Gone was his fear of his torturer. Gone was his resignation about how things had to end. In one swift motion, Driz dropped the suit of armor and snapped out his scimitars. On a nod from Vendez, the two females were on Driz, one circling to each side. One tapped her sword against Twinkle's curving blade, indicating that Driz should probably drop the weapon. He looked down at Twinkle, and all logic told him to comply. He spun the scimitar in a wild arc instead, swishing the female sword aside. His second blade came up suddenly, defeating a thrust from the other side before it ever began. "Oh, fool!" Vendez cried at him in obvious glee. "I do so wish to see you fight, Driz Duaden, since Dantrag is so intent on slaughtering you." The way she said it made Driz wonder who Vendez would want to win that potential fight. He had no time to ponder the continuing intrigue of the chaotic world, though, not with two drow females pressing him so. Vendez reverted to the drow language then, commanding her soldiers to beat Driz fiercely, but not to kill him. Driz turned a sudden spin like a screw, his blades weaving a dangerous pattern on all sides. He came out of it suddenly, viciously, snapping a thrust at the female on his left. He scored a minor hit, doing no real damage against the fabulous drow armor, armor that Driz was not wearing. That point was driven home by the tip of a sword that then nicked Driz from the right. He grimaced and pivoted back, his backhand cut taking the sword away before it could do any real damage. Entreri prayed that Vendez was as intent on the fight as her soldiers, for every movement he made seemed so very clumsy and obvious. Somehow, he managed to get the spider mask out of his pouch and over his trembling hand, and then he reached up and grabbed Catterby's belt. His trembling fingers could not support the hold, though, and he fell back to the floor. Vendez glanced casually his way, snickered, apparently not noticing the mask, and turned back to the fight. Entreri sat half-propped by the wall, trying to find some inner control to ward off the nasty drow enchantment. But all his efforts proved useless. His muscles continued their involuntary twitching. Swords cut in at Driz from every angle. One drew a line on his cheek, stinging him painfully. The skilled females working perfectly in concert kept him pinned near the corner, gave him no room to maneuver. Still, Driz's parrying work was excellent, and Vendez applauded his outstanding, if futile, efforts. Driz knew that he was in serious trouble, unarmored and still weak, though the magical potions continued to flow through his veins. He had a few tricks that could get him past so powerful a tandem. A sword cut low, Driz hopped the blade, another chopped down from the other side, but Driz, crouching as he leapt, got Twinkle up to deflect it. His other scimitar snapped back and forth in front of him, defeating the two middle-height attacks, one from each female, and completing the four-parry. But Driz could not counter with any offensive routines as the relentless barrage continued, forcing him back on his heels, forcing him to react in awkward angles. He hopped and ducked, spun his blades this way and that, and somehow managed to keep those stinging swords from cutting any deep holes in his vulnerable body, though the minor hits were beginning to add up. The ranger glanced forlornly at Catterby, terrified at the prospects of what she would soon face. Entreri continued to wage his futile war, then finally slumped low, defeated, thinking that he could not possibly fight his way past the powerful enchantment. But the assassin had not survived the streets of dangerous Kalimport, had not risen to a position of leadership in the evil underworld of the southern city by accepting defeat. He changed his thinking, decided that he had to work within the parameters offered to him. Entreri's arm shot up above him. His fingers did not grasp. He did not try to grasp, but rather he slapped his arm hard against the binding goo. That was all the grip he would need. With tremendous effort, Entreri coiled his stuck arm and pulled himself halfway up beside the trapped woman. Catterby was watching him, helpless and hopeless, having no idea what he meant to do. She even winced and tried to duck, though of course her head would not move an inch, as the assassin's free arm swung about, as though she feared that he meant to strike her. It was not the jeweled dagger perched in that free hand, though, but the spider mask, and Catterby began to understand as it came over the very top of her head. It wouldn't slip down very far at first, blocked by the binding goo, but that greenish sludge instantly began to give way to the item's mighty magic. Canterbury was fully blinded as the wave of goo, then the bottom lip of the spider mask, covered her one free eye. A moment later, her other eye blinked open. Sparks flew as the battle intensified, the females pressing more fiercely against the stubborn defenses of the renegade male. "Be done with it!" impatient Vendez growled. "Take him down, that we might drag him to the chapel, that he might bear witness as we sacrifice the foolish woman to Loth." Of all the things that Vendez could have said, of all the threats that she could have then laid upon Driz Duarden, none would have been so foolish. The notion of Canterbury, dear and innocent Canterbury, being given to the horrid, wretched Spider Queen was too much for Driz's sensibilities to bear. No longer was he Driz Duarden, for his rational identity was replaced by the welling urges of the primal hunter, the savage. The female on his left came with another measured counter, but the one on his right struck more daringly, one of her swords thrusting far beyond the tip of Driz's blocking scimitar. It was a cunning move, but in the heightened sensibilities of the hunter, that thrusting sword seemed to move almost in slow motion. Driz let the tip get within a few inches of his vulnerable abdomen before the blade in his left hand slashed across, deflecting the sword out wide, crossing under his upraised arm with his other scimitar, working against the female's second sword. His scimitars then crossed in a powerful diagonal parry, alternating their targets, his left arm shooting across and up, his right arm across and down. He dived to his knees, straight ahead, using his closest enemy's body to prevent the other female from hitting him. In came his right hand, deftly turning the blade so that it slashed against the outside of his opponent's knee, buckling the leg. Driz punched out with his left, connecting on the female's belly and throwing her back over that collapsing leg. Still on his knees, the ranger spun desperately, hacking across with his left as the other female rushed in on him. She was too high. The scimitar took one sword out wide, but the other sword poked lower. The hunter's second scimitar intercepted it and turned it aside, though it slashed Driz's skin and nicked a rib. Back and forth went the parries and thrusts, the hunter feeling no pain from this newest and most serious wound. It seemed impossible to Vendez, but Driz managed to get a foot under him and was soon standing even with her skilled soldier. The other female writhed on the ground, clutching her blasted leg and tucking her arm tightly over her slashed belly. "Enough!" Vendez cried, holding her wand Driz's way. She had enjoyed the spectacular battle, but had no intention of losing any females. "Quinhiver!" came a shrill cry. Vendez looked to the side, to the human woman wearing the spider mask, crouching low, away from the binding goo. Canterbury charged out from the wall, dropping the magical figurine and scooping up a certain dagger as she went. Instinctively, Vendez loosed another glob of goo, but it seemed to pass right through the charging woman to splat harmlessly against the wall. Somewhat disoriented and certainly off balance, Canterbury simply dived forward, dagger out. She managed to nick Vendez's hand, but the parrying wand rushed across and turned the deadly blade before it could dig in. Canterbury crashed heavily into the drow's thighs, and both females went sprawling, the woman trying to hold on and Vendez kicking and scrambling fiercely to get away. Driz's scimitars banged against the remaining female sword so rapidly that it sounded like one long, scraping ring. She kept up with his fury for a few moments, to her credit, but gradually her parries came later and later against the barrage of thrusts and cuts. A sword snapped up to her right, defeating Twinkle. Her second sword turned up and out to take the second thrusting scimitar to the side. But the second scimitar was not really thrusting, and it was the female's sword that went out. She recognized the feint and halted her own weapon's progress, bringing it right back in. She was too late. Driz's scimitar plunged through the fine mesh armor. He was open to any counter, but the female had no strength, no life, left as the wicked scimitar jabbed at her heart. She shuddered as Driz withdrew the blade. A flurry of punches battered Canterbury's head as she hugged tightly to the vicious drow's legs. The spider mask had turned about, and Canterbury could not see, but she realized that if Vendez had a weapon handy, she would be in trouble. Blindly, Canterbury reached up with one hand, trying to grab at the drow wrist. Vendez was too quick for the move, though, and not only got her arm out of the way, but wriggled one leg free as well. She coiled and kicked, and Canterbury nearly swooned. Vendez pushed powerfully against her, slipping free. Then Canterbury was scrambling, trying to catch up to the suddenly receding legs. The young woman hesitated for just an instant to pull the troublesome mask from her face, then cried out in denial as she saw Vendez's feet slipping too far from her grasp. The Ben-Ray daughter quickly regained her footing and ran from the room. Catterby could easily fathom the consequences of letting this one get away. Stubbornly, she put her arms under her and started to rise, but was pushed back to the floor by a gentle hand as someone came over her. She saw the bare feet of Driz Duarden hit the stone floor in front of her, in full pursuit. Driz twisted weirdly as he came into the corridor. He threw himself backward into the floor so fiercely that Catterby feared he had been clotheslined. She understood the move as Driz's own doing, though, as a gob of greenish goo flew harmlessly above him. A twisting roll realigned Driz and put his feet back under him, and he shot off like a springing cat. And a springing cat, Gwenhyber followed, leaping over Catterby and into the corridor, turning so perfect an angle the instant the paws touched the stone that Catterby had to blink to make sure she was not seeing things. "Now!" came the doomed drow's cry of protest from in the corridor. The warrior whom Vendez had tortured, had beaten without mercy, was upon her, his eyes raging with fires of vengeance. Gwenhyber came right behind, desperate to help Drizzt, but in the instant it took the cat to reach the fighting, a scimitar had already plunged deep into Vendez's stomach. A groan from the side refocused Catterby's attention. She spotted the wounded female crawling for her dropped weapons. Catterby scrambled immediately, staying on the floor and wrapping her legs about the drow's neck, squeezing with all her strength. Both ebon-skin hands came up to tear at her, to punch at her. But then the female calmed, and Catterby thought she had surrendered until she noticed the drow's lips moving. She was casting a spell. Purely on instinct, Catterby poked her finger repeatedly into the drow's eyes. The chant became cries of pain and protest, and they became no more than a wheeze as Catterby clamped her legs down tighter. Catterby hated this with all her generous heart. The killing revolted her, especially a fight such as this, where she would have to watch for agonizing seconds, minutes perhaps, while she suffocated her opponent. She spied Entreri's dagger not far away and grabbed it. Tears of rage and innocence lost filled her blue eyes as she brought the deadly blade to bear. Gwenhyber skidded to a stop, and Drizzt roughly retracted the embedded blade and took a step back. "Now!" stunned Vendez repeated, the drow word for no. Vicious duck tack seemed little to Drizzt then, almost pitiful. She was doubled over in pain, trembling violently. She fell over at Drizzt's feet. Her mouth moved, forming the denying word one last time, but no sound came from her breathless lips, and the red glow left her eyes forever.